councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Philosophies that shape our society. It's about scrutinizing history that we may save the future. It's about understanding control that we may act with free will. It's about truth, known and unknown. It's about reality, seen and unseen. It's about time to take a closer look. Your host is Michael Corbin.
And good Friday morning to you, and today, as I promised, we're going to have a really, really powerful program. The watchword today is political corruption. That's kind of like the watchword every day, but political corruption is what we're going to be looking at today. And we're going to look at some significant corruption. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking with a person here. You're familiar with her, but this material you're going to hear today has never, ever been published or broadcast, and it is the culmination of several years of intense research. Now, what I'm talking about, and it's kind of interesting that the program that we're doing is falling on the day that it is today, October the 28th, because Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald had an indictment in his hand Friday morning and was standing before District Judge Thomas Hogan, who must sign off on the first official charges in the leak of a CIA operative's identity more than 2 years ago. Now, I'm reading this article from Fox News. Washington Post reporter Carol Leonig told Fox News that Fitzgerald was set to present the charge against Vice President Dick Cheney's top aide, Lewis Scooter Libby, late Friday morning. Now, the indictment was expected to charge Libby with a felony for making false statements to mislead the grand jury. This is just the tip of the iceberg, folks. Now, Fox News has learned that Libby will step down as Cheney's chief of staff, and a replacement will be named as early as Saturday. The vice president's office will release a statement when the indictment is handed down. President Bush is expected to remark on the case in this afternoon today. Now, the charge is based on the assertion that Libby was not upfront with the grand jury about when he first learned the identity of CIA operative Valerie Plame, sources told Fox News on Friday. Libby had first told the grand jury that he learned her identity from reporters, but his own notes later showed he learned her identity from Cheney. Now, Karl Rove, President Bush's top political aide, is being spared from criminal charges on Friday, but the possibility he would later be charged remained open. This is very interesting, folks. Now, the special counsel has advised Mr. Rove that he has made no decision about whether or not to bring charges, and that Mr. Rove's status has not changed. Mr. Rove will continue to cooperate fully with the special counsel's efforts to complete the investigation. We are confident that when the special counsel finishes his work, he will conclude that Mr. Rove has done nothing wrong. That's according to Rove's attorney, Robert Luskin, who said in a statement that he released Friday. Now, reports have indicated that Fitzgerald would keep Rove under investigation. According to a source familiar with the court, the grand jury set to expire on Friday is a regular grand jury that has already had one extension of its term. It cannot be extended beyond this day. That means that Fitzgerald would have to call for a new jury or simply proceed without any jury at all if he wanted to continue to pursue Rove. So you see how this game is played. This is a game. Documents relating to the case were expected to be released at or shortly after noon Eastern Daylight Time on Friday. The documents were being released at the Department of Justice and the U.S. District Court. Now, last week, Fitzgerald set up a website for the public to view documents relating to the investigation. Fitzgerald is holding a 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Conference, which is about noon today here, Mountain Time, to discuss the grand jury's activities. The White House said it would comment on Friday's activities after Fitzgerald speaks. Now, that is just the surface of the magnitude of this problem, okay? And living true to our name, a closer look, we are going to take a closer look at what's really going on here, because a lot of people say, well, you know, this, you know, sure, a couple of people got killed in the outing of Valerie Plame, but so what? Well, I got to tell you that it goes much, much deeper than that. Now, as we know, Patrick Fitzgerald is a special prosecutor on the what is being dubbed as the Plamegate incident. Now, significance of Plamegate in the bigger picture. Destroyed a global weapons of mass destruction search team, okay, which is kind of a pattern of the Bush crime family cabal in the last 50 years. We're talking about conspiracy, collusion, cover-up. Now, we are going to be looking at, for example, one angle that we're going to be doing today. We're going to be looking at core sets of patterns, okay, and also the same high-level operatives, about 50 to 200 of them, old and new organizations, and a new cadre of indebted, controlled foot political soldiers. That is what lies ahead on the program today, because I will be joined here momentarily by Indira Singh. Now, as I said before, you'll know that name, Indira Singh, because, and I'm just going to give you kind of a real short recap of who she is. Indira is a IT specialist, and she was working for J.P. Morgan Chase Bank in New York. She'd been contracted by them to design an artificial intelligence software system that would work in real time in Chase Manhattan's banks all over the world, and it would be something that would detect fraud at the teller level or what have you. And it was through that job, that contract that she had, that she learned about a company in Boston called P-TECH. Well, what you've heard so far is just, again, it's just scratching the surface of a much, much bigger picture. And that is what we're going to be talking with her about today. As I said before, this material has never been made public. It's never been broadcast before. So you're going to hear it here first on this program. So without further ado, let's go to my guest, Indira Singh. Good morning, Indira, and thank you for being with me on the program today.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me back.
No problem. Now, what I did was I started out here talking about this this grand jury and the Plamegate investigator, Patrick Fitzgerald.
Right.
And we're talking about, you know, the idea that as I understand it, Libby Scooter is probably definitely going to be indicted today, but they're holding off on Karl Rove. But the kicker here, and what I find really interesting and puzzling, is that the grand jury's term expires today.
That's
so
correct.
The only way that they can continue an investigation of Karl Rove is to do it either, you know, kind of solo without a grand jury, which I don't think is going to happen. And what I'd like to do is let's back into this conversation that we're going to have today. Let's start out with Patrick Fitzgerald. Who is this character?
Well, Patrick Fitzgerald is someone that I've had in my crosshairs since he was involved with the quote-unquote prosecution of an Al-Qaeda someone connected with Al-Qaeda, and in August 2003, he led the prosecution into this person. But his affiliation with terror in Al-Qaeda, shall we say, based terror goes way back. He, for instance, prosecuted World Trade Center 93 Sheikh Rahman. And after that, he served on a team of prosecutors investigating Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
After that, he served as chief counsel in prosecutions related to the 98 U.S. Embassy bombings in Tanzania and Kenya. So after 9/11, he shows up, and the very first 9/11 Al-Qaeda-related a prosecution in the United States was to someone who ran a Benevolence International Foundation. This person is Enam Arnaut. That's A-R-N-A-U-T.
Mm-hmm.
And your listeners can, you know, look up the significance of that. When he gave Enam Arnaut basically a free pass for the connections to Al-Qaeda and therefore 9/11, I knew we were in serious trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And Here's how that happened. Benevolence International Foundation is mentioned in 9/11 lawsuits. They're on the terror list, the U.S. List of designated terror charities, and they're listed in the $1 trillion lawsuit brought by Motley Nass and Gershon against the Saudis, and also another 9/11 lawsuit. So Benevolence International Foundation is huge. It's big. It was based in Chicago, but it had arms in Boston and down in Texas. Enam Arnot was their main operative. Patrick Fitzgerald has been appointed or showed up at every significant terrorist-related event in this country's history.
Right.
And you would think that he has the inside architecture and the links of these people very well understood by the time of his prosecution in 2003. And indeed he has, and that's exactly why he's significant. Because he, I believe, he basically got the judge to pin the charges that he was sent to jail for, Arnot was sent to jail for, was just basically the misutilization of charity funds. He sent to the funds that were received to Muslim fighters in Bosnia and Chechnya.
Right.
Hardly a 9/11 indictment.
Mm-hmm.
When that happened, as you know, I was working with someone in Senator Grassley's office as a Secret Service agent, and because the way we get these is by tracking the money, financial
right.
crimes.
Right.
And Secret Service, you know, is a Department of Treasury, but also it's more than that. I believe he was appointed to find out what I knew and to clear it and to cover tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him basically that I was going to lay low and not name names and not get, you know, stop my investigation and my, you know, connecting the dots with the PTEC situation, if depending on what happened with Enam Arnot.
Right.
When Enam Arnot was given 10 years just for, you know, oops, I sent the money to Chechnya instead of somewhere else, and Patrick Fitzgerald was a prosecutor there, I knew that this country was in serious trouble, really serious trouble. And I was looking at an email that I sent to the Secret Service agent. I sent it in August 19, 2003, and I said, the deal's off, the bet's off. I said, this stinks of a cover-up. I don't know how big the cover-up is yet, but I'm going to find out, and the deal's off. I'm going to name names, I'm going to start talking, and I did.
Okay. Indy, hold that right there. Indira, hold that right there. We're going to take our break. When we come back, we will continue, okay?
Okay.
All right. Indira Singh is my guest. And folks, again, brace yourselves. You're going to hear quite a story today. And as I said before, this has not ever been broadcast or released in the public venue. You're hearing the culmination of a several-year-long investigation by Indira Singh, my guest. And this does go to some very, very interesting and high places. We're going to take our break. When we come back, we will continue. I'm Michael Corbin. You're listening to A Closer Look. Just have a closer look. And again, joining me this morning is my guest, Indira Singh, a very courageous lady. She has foregone a very lucrative career to get to the truth about what happened on 9/11. And I can tell you, folks, her life has been an interesting journey since then. And she has really penetrated what I believe to be the real action and the real cabal about what is in charge, who's in charge, and where all of this goes. And as I've said earlier, you know, this thing about Valerie Plame and the Plamegate incident is just the tip, literally the tip of the iceberg. Indira, welcome back, and again, thank you for coming on the air today.
Thank you, Michael.
Let's go to let's start here first of all. What is the significance of Plamegate in the bigger picture?
Plamegate was basically Valerie Plame, wife of Joe Wilson, ambassador to Niger, was a CIA operative, and her outing by Cheney Rove and company destroyed a global WMD, weapons of mass destruction search team, a global one.
Yeah.
These are the good guys that would catch terrorists who may have weapons that we don't want them to have, such as neutron bombs.
Right.
Now, this was strategically masterminded at a very high level. The same names come up, and again, this will the significance in my mind, the most important part, is that it brilliantly shows a pattern of the Bush, what for lack of a better word, the Bush crime family cabal the last 50 years. Their pattern of conspiracy, collusion, and cover-up utilize the same core set of patterns, the same high-level operatives, we think 50 to 200 right. different levels, old and new organizations and political foot soldiers, but at the highest level, we see Michael Ledeen, an Iran-Contra op. I think the tactical direction was by Karl Rove, and foot soldiers even include Ledeen's daughter, Simone. And the reason this is kind of interesting, because it ties back to earlier shows, the publicity, the actual outlet that outed it was none other than Jeff Gannon's, the White House male prostitute, talent news agency, which was funded by Bobby Eberle of GOP USA. And, you know, his leadership institute gave Gannon his Land Speed Record 2-day journalism degree. They stuck him in the White House, and one of his sterling tasks was to publicize the outing of Valerie Plame. Now, going back to Michael Ledeen, this right after 9/11, one of the things about this cabal is we know it's bipartisan, we know it's transnational, and indeed this involved Italy, the Niger, and other countries, and members of Bush 41's Iran-Contra operative, Ledeen Ghorbanifor. Ghorbanifor is or was an Iranian arms dealer with heavy ties to the Mossad who facilitated Iran-Contra. And Berlusconi Panorama magazine, which passed the forged documents to the U.S. press. We go back to a well-publicized and very troubling meeting that was held in late 2001 between Ledeen Ghorbanifor, Larry Franklin, and Harold Rhodes. These are people who are extremely high up in what we call the neocon thread of the cabal. And Ledeen, for instance, is of the American Enterprise Institute, which hosts another number of names. I believe Stephen Hadley, who was a national security advisor at that point, was there. And there are links to Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage. We are talking about a sterling cast of characters who are sitting down together in Italy talking about the documents, which we now know are forged. And we also have a good suspicion of who forged them and what the person we think was supposedly committed suicide in Italy earlier this year. And this brings us to back to the same cast of characters that are affiliated with the American Enterprise Institute, which this year just reconvened something called the Committee on the Present Danger. And I refer to that as a neocon love fest with the usual suspects. And the day I met there was a day I got hit by a car in Herndon, Virginia. So, I mean, I will put that down to coincidence right now, but it really didn't do anything. In other words, it's very hard for me to think that was coincidental.
Right, sure.
Now, I believe that the purpose at that point, they were negotiating the next step to get us into Iraq and Iran. And why would they want to do that? You know, when we step back and take a look at the significance of destroying a global WMD search team to getting us into a war in the Middle East, what really are they up to? Is it just about oil? And the answer is, as we know, no.
Yeah.
When PTAC first fell in my lap, I spoke to some of the top experts in the world on terrorism financing. And one of them, Loretta Napoleoni, everyone has their idea on it, but when you rationalize all these threads and ideas, it is clear that what we're being ushered into is nothing less than the age of terror. What that means is what is being globalized is the economy of terror, where every aspect of our economy, our daily lives, are mandated by a blueprint of terror.
So it affects us all the way down to the consumer level, of course.
All the way down to the consumer level, and you will see this reflected by the RFID chips, by the Patriot Act 2 and 3 and 4 that are coming, and so on and so forth. Your every step will be will fall in a world that is controlled and monitored by extreme terror that has been engineered and set up by basically the Bush crime family, the cabal of 50 to 100, 200 top people, however you want to, you know.
Right, right.
And, you know, they're foot soldiers. I see Patrick Fitzgerald, for instance, you know, very in much the same way I see John Kerry when he investigated, and the other investigators of the big crimes in our nation's past, which Iran, Contra, and BCCI. These were all vehicles and venues that enable and us to move to this point 20, 30, 40 years later.
Yeah.
He, you know, first, he's a foot soldier for them, and he reminds me of John Kerry because John Kerry, who is supposed to be a hero in the BCCI investigation, he prosecuted,
yeah,
you know, these things. He made sure that certain things were exposed, but certain things weren't.
Okay.
And
Indira, hold that thought right there. We got to take this break, and
sure.
When we come back, I want to pick up on that thread. Okay.
Yes.
Indira Singh is my guest. And we're going to not take calls at the moment, but later on in the program, we will open the lines to your calls, because I'm sure a lot of people will have some questions. Of course, this is a very, very big story. We'll be right back after the break. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to A Closer Look. And she is an incredibly courageous whistleblower, because, again, this woman has done an investigation, a blue ribbon investigation into the threads that run throughout the 9/11 tragedy that occurred in New York on September the 11th, 2001. And what you're hearing again, folks, is exclusive material of her investigation. It goes into some incredible places. Indira, welcome back.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, let's jump back into where we were before we took the break.
Yeah, we were speaking of Plainsgate, the significance of that, and really the bottom line, we come across the usual suspects that feature high in the Bush crime family cabal, and which, as we say, is bipartisan and transnational. And the significance of that is that American heroes were killed by that outing, the outing by someone like a Jeff Gannon, and funded by Bobby Eberle's GOP USA, working for Karl Rove in the White House, who just, I understand, got a free pass today.
By the way, Jeff Gannon listens to this program.
Well, he should.
Yeah.
Let's see if he can, you know, if he has the brain cycles to understand these connections and then their significance.
Mm-hmm.
They destroyed a global WMD search team. Operatives were killed in the process of doing work against this terror cabal, and it was worldwide, from Pakistan, different countries, and so on. And it really upset a lot of people within the CIA, and a lot of them started coming out, speaking, helping, giving information that would help investigations such as mine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the significance of that today. And, of course, then we focus on Patrick Fitzgerald. And in my book, he's just another John Kerry. I guess they're grooming the next generation, because he's a part of a breed of – he's a special prosecutor, not an independent counsel, so he's not required to give a report on what he discovered. But he has the inside players and cast of characters and knows just how far to go so as not to upset the cabal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what he did, and I've been watching him since 2002, 2003, forgiving Enam Arnot of Benevolence International Foundation a free pass, because Enam Arnot was the one ace in the hole they had that could connect, could bring this entire thing down. And, of course, he's connected with the Muslim Brotherhood in Chicago and Boston, and through that, directly to the members of PTEC and the four or five money laundering and smuggling companies that were affiliated with it.
Okay.
And with that, you know, we should get into the core of what we have now. I've spoken on this program before about about whistleblowing on PTEC, which, oh, by the way, has changed their name, as all these companies that work with the cabal eventually do, and they're in focus. As you know, a number of names were affiliated with PTEC, And I've always said that if PTAC is the one place that you look, if you know what you're doing, the entire cast of characters will be revealed. And we do have a transnational bipartisan cast of characters. I've spoken on in the past about the Saudis that were involved with it. The Saudi bin Laden group was heavily involved. There were four bin Ladens involved with PTAC. And we all know the bin Laden group has very deep pocket ties to the Carlyle group, to Bechtel, to Halliburton, and so on and so forth. And we have Khalid bin Mahfouz, who is Osama's brother-in-law, despite his suing 28 authors. And he is a current business partner of former New Jersey Governor Thomas Kane,
mm-hmm.
Who the very person George Bush appointed to chair the investigation of the September 11th Terrorist Act. But what's really interesting about Governor Kane, as we've mentioned in this program before, is that he was doing business with people involved with PTAC.
Right.
And, you know, some of the other Saudis involved with PTAC was Mohammed Alamoudi, an investor convicted for terror financing, small convictions. Yaqub Mirza, who is a subject of a massive treasury investigation, Operation Green Quest, that was stymied at every step. We have other people involved with Namir Petroleum investing in PTAC, which goes back to bin Mahfouz. And, of course, their boy, Yasin al-Qadi, a Saudi sheikh, who is a member of the Saudi royal family. And he was the one that Bush's administration put on the terror list after 9/11. And, you know, someone asked me a good question, why Yasin Qadi, if he was such a buddy of George Bush, and why not someone like Khalid bin Mahfouz? And my answer after investigating is basically he was the only one they could put on there, the only token offering they could put on there, since he was a foot soldier of the Saudis, that could where the trail to Bush and others and Cheney and the whole cabal could be managed quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the significance of PTAC has, every time that I've brought up the issue of it's about the people behind PTAC, not necessarily the software, the focus, including the Secret Service and Gregory's office, the focus all wanted to place on it was always that it was promised version 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure your listeners all know Promise Software was about and what happened to Danny Casolaro, who was investigating Promise, and he had discovered something called the octopus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hold that thought, because we're going to come back to the lair of the octopus that comes all the way back to this.
Okay.
Now, all of these people mentioned here have very, very close ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, and we've spoken on this program before about what is a Muslim Brotherhood, and I want to make it very clear now that they may be Muslims, but they're not Muslims in the sense that millions and millions of good people are Muslims, just as millions of Christians are good Christians. They're not Muslims. They use Muslims, and they use the Islamic religion to perpetrate their terrorist acts.
Mm-hmm.
Muslim Brotherhood goes all the way back to World War II and Hitler and elements in the United States that banded with them. They're the ones, a Saudi-Egyptian group that helped Hitler fund the concentration camps, for example. So people should really understand who they are. They're terrorists. That transnational bipartisan terrorists has been going on
uh-huh.
for that long.
Uh-huh.
So having said that, let's move on to the Muslim Brotherhood and 9/11. All these characters within PTAC were members of the Muslim Brotherhood, including Enam Arnaout. But one of the things that I've never talked about openly about what was actually going on behind PTAC takes us right to George Bush. These names that Patrick Fitzgerald and who was a Chicago U.S. attorney and Agent Robert Wright, who also was in charge of the Chicago FBI investigation into Yasin Qadi.
Mm-hmm.
You might remember that Agent Robert Wright knew Fitzgerald, of course, and had said right after 9/11, he stood on the steps of the Capitol in June 2002, and he burst into tears and said if his investigation into Yasin Qadi and PTAC and BMI hadn't been shut down and stymied, there would not have been a 9/11.
Right.
And I keep coming back to that. What exactly did he know? And here's what he knew. We need to talk about the three, there were about three, I'm sorry, there were five people, it was in PTEC, who not only worked at extremely high levels in PTEC, there were, for example, high enough that there were one of two people who had access to source code, but they also ran something called CARE International. Now, the first question is, with a slew of charities on the 9/11 list as designated as terror fronts, why was CARE International left out? Now, this is not the big CARE International. This is a CARE International that was in, was run out of PTEC. CARE, this is the one that was based in Boston, in Massachusetts. And what we found out about CARE is that CARE's addresses were the same addresses used by the Muslim Brotherhood organization that was located, for example, in Brighton, Massachusetts, and on Prospect Street in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We have the PTEC names affiliated with PTEC and CARE International, the what I call the PTEC CARE International, or the Muslim Brotherhood CARE International. Sahail Lahir was a co-founder and member of the Muslim Brotherhood and PTEC and CARE International. Mohammed Mubayad was a treasurer, member of the Muslim Brotherhood and PTEC, and he was also connected to World Trade Center bombing of 93. I wonder how Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald could have missed that in his prosecution of Enam Arnot.
Mm-hmm.
Mohammed Akra was the president of CARE International. Now, these people were under investigation by the Boston FBI prior to 9/11. Akra himself was on the FBI terror watch list. Another name that came up was Samir Al-Monla. All of these people were involved with the core people that founded and ran PTEC. Now, on September 5, 2001, 1 week before 9/11, two Muslim Brotherhood companies, and I will call PTEC a Muslim Brotherhood company, and Infocom, they were related by these terrorist connections that included Enam Arnot. Now, on September 5th, PTEC was moving, and I believe in that move, they destroyed and hit a lot of records, and a company and technology company in Richardson, Texas, by the name of Infocom, was raided.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Infocom is very interesting because they were ISPs to many, many of these organizations that were involved with bringing us a number of terrorist attacks, including 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, he was ISP to Anthony El-Ghindi, the person that was allegedly allegedly placed the airline 9/11 puts, and who was the subject of other lawsuits and convicted several times by the SEC and so on.
Wasn't this Infocom also involved in distribution of child pornography? Was that another outfit?
They were ISP to someone involved, an organization involved with pornography.
I heard that. You know, I just wanted to ask you if that was true. Okay, go ahead.
Now, Infocom was also, by the way, ISP to Al Jazeera, and we believe that they were shut down by the FBI simply because there were some very good people there that would have spilled the beans.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were a lot of reasons to shut them down. Now, let's go back to Boston and the Muslim Brotherhood lairs there. Prospect Street, a Muslim Brotherhood hangout, was also where Dr. Osama Kandil was hanging out with the CARE and PTEC people. Kandil runs BioPharm in Herndon, Virginia, and that was a matter of great concern because of the bioterror aspects of this whole terror blueprint. Mohammed Akra, who was president of CARE, the interesting thing is he had a base in College Station, Texas. These guys were not only in Richardson, but in College Station, Texas. You know what college that refers to, the College of Texas A&M, which is Bush's
alma mater. Yeah.
And, prior to 9/11, Accra, everyone is moving. The week before 9/11, all of these guys in the Muslim Brotherhood are on the move. He flees to the Sudan and cancels his credit cards. And there is another Accra in Dallas who is from Nigeria. This is kind of interesting because this is part of the threads that connect for me into this rope of terror that's got this nation and the world, you know, under its grip.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to probably come back to this, but Nigeria features very heavily in the Cheney money laundering bribery scandal that the French are going to probably indict him for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going back to Dr. Kandil, who was with the Muslim Brotherhood and with all the PTEC people and CARE International people, he's connected with Dr. Sami Alarian of Tampa. So Kandil and Accra are co-located at the same address in Cambridge, and so are the PTEC people.
Uh-huh.
Well, and what else do they have in common? Well, what they have in common is in this warehouse, district in Braintree, Massachusetts. Now, this area and this warehouse and this trucking company that runs out of there are affiliated, according to the FBI and private investigator sources, to the Whitey Bulger mob.
That's significant.
It's very significant because the Boston FBI rated among the by the organization that rates FBI considers the Boston FBI as one of the most corrupt in the nation because they basically let the mob run wild with the murders and whatever else.
Yeah.
But going back to this address in Braintree, Massachusetts, listed there are a bunch of names and five companies. Five companies where the people running these companies are closely affiliated with PTEC. One of the companies we've just talked about is CARE International. Another one is Ecom. Another one is Logan Furniture. Another one is Bannon Information Technology. Now, the interesting thing about these things is that they all share the same address. It's a warehouse. Now, it's one room in a warehouse. If you go... Now, I visited 20 Plain Street, Braintree, some time ago, and I went there and went inside and went upstairs, and it's basically just a warehouse. There are no offices.
Mm-hmm.
And the companies located there share one huge warehouse, and when you take a look at what's going on there, there's a lot of trucking in and out. I walked up to the Logan Furniture people, and I spoke with them. They said, I asked them, well, why do you call Logan Furniture? He said, because of Logan Airport. And the person who runs Logan Furniture is an Imad Muntasser, and his name is comes up all over the Muslim Brotherhood terror financing and other operatives.
Mm-hmm.
So Bannon Information Technology, these are all fronts. They're all cutouts. They're
sure.
Just names. Bannon Information Technology is actually a Texas incorporated company with an address at 20 Plain Street and in the Sudan. And also co-located there is something called the Geneva Capital Group.
Ooh.
And the Geneva Capital Group is kind of interesting because it's connected with a small Wall Street company with none other than Khalilzad in charge. Khalilzad, that name comes up in the Bush administration regarding Afghanistan and ambassadors and people in key positions in Afghanistan and in
Iraq.
Basically Iraq.
Yeah.
Now, what we have here is part of an elaborate money laundering scheme. They were involved with not only smuggling to Bosnia and Chechnya, but they were involved with smuggling to Switzerland, Lebanon, you name the Middle Eastern country, they were shipping stuff back and forth from there. But at this point, we need to stop and see what we have. The people behind this quad of companies, through their associations, have well-publicized and historical access right into both President Bush and into President Clinton's administration.
Mm.
Now, and this is a matter of not of conspiracy theory.
No.
These are accusations and these are charges were brought against all of these people in court.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to move now into the other aspect of what was going on with Bannon Information Technology that has never been made public and CARE International.
Okay.
When I started investigating CARE International, they still had a website up. When I started investigating Bannon Information Technology, their website had come down. When we took a look at these websites, it was clear that there was no business being run out of these. They were just fronts. A private investigative firm investigated both websites and took a look at it and deconstructed it, and came across some very strange pages. The pages, they determined, were quite likely used for conveying information through the use of steganography. Now, steganography is a technique that Al-Qaeda and the 9/11 operatives used quite extensively. And what it means, how that works, is as follows. You can have a page on a website and a picture, and embedded in the picture are basically documents, other instructions, text messages, emails, you know, the Word documents, whatever the content can be embedded in there. And if anyone looks at the website, all they see is a harmless-looking picture.
Right. I've heard this stuff before. This is kind of super spy kind of stuff, isn't it?
It's absolutely super spy stuff. And at the time that I looked at it, you can pretty much tell what is used for steganography to the practiced eye is something that I've I've had some skills in it myself going back to the mid-80s, actually to the late 80s and early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so you begin to recognize what it is. And sure enough, when we were going through, when I was being debriefed at CERT, the Carnegie Mellon Institute that worked with the Secret Service on cyber crimes, of which they considered PTEC to be a cyber crime because of the software being promised to, as they suspected. We looked at these sites, and these experts looked at it and said, steganography. It doesn't take a rocket scientist in this day and age to figure something like that out. And there is software that will deconstruct the images and, you know, try. You could at least find that something is there, even if you can't decode it.
Right.
So one of the pages was extraordinarily significant, because once you sort of navigated your way through it, you went to lower and lower levels, and all of a sudden, there were a set of pages where the code word Babylon was featured very heavily. So again, this is a point to stop and say, what do we have here?
Mm-hmm.
We have here a set of companies that have been covered up, that had ties to Geneva, ties to Wall Street, ties to Khalilzad, ties that were on FBI lists in both Boston and Chicago, where good FBI agents were stymied in their efforts to research them. And at the core of these companies in Braintree is a code word for an operation called Babylon. Now, what is significant about this, when we started looking at it, is that Babylon, of course, is Iraq. And what's significant about this is that these people funding the smuggling of stuff, they were smuggling it into the areas around Iraq and into Iraq itself. When I first came across this and the WMD search in Iraq, I thought that for sure they would find it, because from what I could see, we were shipping it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if not in Iraq, then definitely around Iraq. And when we thought about what would be useful to be shipped from the United States, well, it wouldn't be uranium or things like that. It would be enabling technologies, blueprints to build WMDs. And that is exactly what the people within PTEC who blew the whistle themselves said. Listen, we're not shipping, you know, anything. If what is being smuggled out of here is not going to be drugs or whatever, it's going to be blueprints. And it's going to be, you know, things like diamonds, in which you settle. That's the currency of money laundering. And given Yasin Qadhi's affiliation with the diamond business in South Africa, the blood diamonds, that is exactly what they suspected were being shipped.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely a key part of how they coordinated their activities in for Iraq. There is no question that these ties go right back to the neocons, to to the Bush administration, to the people within the Bush and the Clinton administration, who we find popping up through our nation scandals.
Mm-hmm.
excuse me. when we saw the Babylon, I took this to some of the experts in who were expert money launderers, experts in worldwide terrorism and narco-terrorism and in money laundering to support terrorist activities, and their interpretation of it was very significant. They agreed totally. And I said, you know, to one of them, I said, don't you see that this indicts the entire Bush administration and the neocon cabal that seems to be, you know, part of the larger group? And they didn't say anything. They were absolutely, you know, they felt that they had honed in and zeroed in on the Muslim Brotherhood, and yet at the same time honed in on the plan to invade Iraq.
Yeah. Indira, hold that thought. We got to take the news break, okay? When we come back, yes. We'll continue. Excellent work, by the way.
Thank you.
And I'm hoping that getting this information out is going to inspire, good men and women in law enforcement to look deeper into this situation and get this stuff brought out and get the people responsible prosecuted, you know? Anyway, we'll take the news break. We'll come back, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Indira Singh is my guest.